Welcome to the Bear Arms Show. Your fun, sometimes witty source for news, commentary, and interviews. We focus on efforts to protect and restore the right to keep and bear arms. Arm yourself with the information you need to protect your rights. With your hosts, John and Michael.
Hello, and welcome to the pandemonium-inducing podcast of pandemic proportions. Without the propaganda. Without the propaganda. It is I, your humble host, Mr. John Willett, joined as always by my trusty brother, Mr. Michael Willett.
Good evening.
Good evening, yes.
Good evening.
Yes, it's been a mostly good week, I think. We've had a little bit of wintry weather on this coast. How are things looking out there in the beautiful western rocky area?
Region.
There you go. The rocky region of northern Idaho.
Sunny and upper 50s.
Sunny and upper 50s. It's like being at the beach.
It is like.
Does it feel like you're in Miami?
What's that?
Does it feel like you're in Miami?
I'm not sure.
No, Will Smith Miami. Isn't.
Will, okay, I got you. I got your reference. Will Smith.
Yes.
No, it doesn't feel like that. It feels much better because I can carry my sidearm and a rifle around in my hands, and nobody's gonna
rub it in.
Really notice.
Rub it in. Keep rubbing it in. That's fine.
Well, they do notice because they're like, "Hey, that's a good looking gun."
Oh, is that what they say to you?
Yes, that's what they say.
They're like, "I'm all about those guns, boy."
It's a good looking AR-15.
Oh, is that what you ride around with?
Yep.
Do you have like a holster? Do you have a tactical sling, like patrol sling or something going on? What are you doing?
All right. Since you want to talk about this, I was thinking about making myself a Kydex holster for my AR-15. So when I'm not using it, I could snap that bad boy to my chest.
Wait, you're going to have a Kydex holster and strap it to your chest?
Yeah. That way I could just snap my AR to my chest, you know, at an angle, you know, barrel down.
Okay.
So I could use my hands, you know, hands free.
Uh-huh.
And then if I needed my AR, I could snap that bad boy out of the holster. And
see, I had envisioned I had envisioned you wearing it across your back as though it were like a broadsword.
No, not like a sheath.
Right.
No, gotcha. I'm going to make like a C-clip retention kind of thing.
Oh, wait. Kydex. The broadsword that you're wearing would get in the way, right? Is that what would happen?
Yeah, it would get in the way of my AR.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Or my sidearm.
That I wear. Machetes. And...
Yep.
Uh-huh.
That's how we do.
All right. So the rundown for the show. We got one quick report. Mike was out in the field this week, and he's going to be giving us a report.
Shaking hands and kissing babies.
You're shaking hands. Are you running for office?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just like to shake hands and kiss babies.
You just go around kissing people's babies?
Right. Freak them out a little bit, so maybe they'll think about safety of their family and so, go get their concealed carry permit.
You're stimulating them to be conscious of safe. Gotcha.
Right.
Nice. Well done.
Right. So that's why I occasionally shave, so I can go and do that and then grow my beard out again, and they won't recognize me when they come to the concealed carry class.
When they come to your concealed, yes. Well done. You're drumming up business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. After that, we're going to talk about, how should I quote, being a dirty gouger.
Yes,
we're gonna talk about
by lying about your stuff to sling your garbage.
That's right. Now this has to do with the gun show you were at.
Yes.
Okay. So those are gonna kind of you're gonna give us the objective report, and then you're gonna give us your subjective criticism of
right.
something that you saw there. So those are two separate segments, but back to back.
Right.
Okay. Fair enough. We're going to discuss an article in the Idaho State Journal. Is constitutional carry a good idea? ? We got a couple articles to cite on that we're going to link to. And finally, as we get into our philosophy segment, we're going to discuss a little bit how being a victim does not make you an expert. And get a little bit into that. So, that said, we're going to the words of wisdom, as we always do, with Mr. Michael Willett.
In episode 10, words of wisdom come from John Locke. We've used him, I think, a couple times before for great, great quotes. And episode 10's words of wisdom say, "Any single man must judge for himself whether circumstances warrant obedience or resistance to the commands of the civil magistrate. We are all qualified, entitled, and morally obligated to evaluate the conduct of our rulers. This political judgment, moreover, is not simply or primarily a right, but like self-preservation, a duty to God. As such, it is a judgment that men cannot part with according to the God of nature. It is the first and foremost of our inalienable rights, without which we can preserve no other."
So, excellent words of wisdom from John Locke. If you're not listening closely, you might say to yourself, "John Lott, isn't he into statistics?" No, not John Lott. This is John Locke, philosopher and thinker from, say, the mid-1700s, early 1700s. We're talking excellent thoughts. All right. So with that, we're going to go to our weekly news update segment with our reporter in the field, Mr. Michael Willett.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What is all that happening behind you there? What? There's a little bit of static coming through on the satellite truck.
Is the chopper too loud? I can barely hear you.
Yes, with the traffic report.
Right. So this weekend was the Gun and Horn Show in Sandpoint, Idaho. It's put on by the Bonner County Sportsmen. It's in Bonner County, Idaho, which is the county where Sandpoint is.
And a gun and horn show. So this is a show where they're displaying guns and horns.
Selling guns and other various items and displaying horns. And there's a contest for horns.
And by horns, we mean antlers.
Right. Okay. Right. Elk, moose, deer. And along with those, they also had a contest for trail camera shots. This is how awesome this place is where I live. They have contests to see how cool of a trail cam picture you can get.
That's pretty good. I like this.
Yes, it is nice. They also have skins. You could buy skins. They had people that were looking for skins so they could tan them, make rugs out of them, stuff like that. They had people blowing glass. They had gun dealers with tables, vendors with tables. They had people selling army surplus. They had knives, lots of knives. They had a guy sharpening knives right there at his booth. You could bring your knife over to him, and for a couple bucks, he'd sharpen that, including your serrated knives.
Please tell me you got pictures.
I did not.
What?
I was busy. I was working.
Oh, you were working at this event, so you just weren't there to peruse.
Or chasing my kids.
Or chasing your kids, right. Which is also like a job. Okay.
Yes. So I was moonlighting, and there was an outstanding turnout. There's a great number of people that came through, and a lot of great conversations about firearms, rights, definitions of things. People discussing the differences between 223 and 5.56.
Okay.
And some differences in those, and that spawned like a 4 or 5 hour conversation, which was entertaining.
So were these conversations that were happening right around the booth, or was there some sort of area where people were, you know?
Oh, they were happening from booth to booth, from table to table, and then from row to row, because we would have a discussion at our table, and it would travel down to the other end of the arena, and then it would travel back, and there would be some more misconceptions that would be portrayed, and I would whip out my handy-dandy phone and show them, this is the dimensions for this case, and these are the dimensions for this case, and here are the pressures for one, and here are the pressures for the other. So there is a definite difference between the two. That is why they tell you, do not do this.
Now, we know that there's been a lot of controversy going on around this, the ammo ban for the X, is it M85?
It's for the M855.
The M855.
The green tip. Just call it the green tip.
It's the green tip ammo. So was the controversy, was it located around that topic, or was it a bunch of different stuff?
It wasn't about that topic. I don't recall talking to anyone about that, like anyone asking about that.
Okay.
It was about the difference between 223 and 5.56, because when someone asked me what the caliber of the rifle was, I told them it was a 5.56, and they said, oh, it's a 223. And I said, no, it's a 5.56.
Gotcha.
So we had to clarify the standing on that.
Right, because the 5.56 has its higher pressures than the 223, right?
A 5.56 by 45 millimeter shoots at 51,000 pounds per square inch. And the 223 shoots at around 30 to 35,000 pounds per square inch.
Right. So if something's rated for 223, it's not necessarily capable of firing 5.56.
Right.
Gotcha.
That's exactly it. So while discussing that, we were talking some other things over. Talked to a kid who was looking to get into security, and what he should carry, and which way he should carry, and how, you know, stance. And we got into stance and grip and everything, you know, that goes into shooting.
So you said you were working at this event. What were you doing?
I was at a booth for Derbs Guns. He's a local Federal Firearms licensee around here in Sagal, which is just south of Sandpoint, and he was selling some items. He had some 22 long rifle he was selling, and he was selling some 22 caliber rifles and a 22 250 rifle and some handguns. And I was there because the owner and I have been in discussions with building rifles and making custom rifles for customers, for clients.
So you guys have a nice relationship, and you were there to help out with the booth.
Right. I was there to help watch the booth when he had his family there, when he needed to go and do something, or to help answer questions about different rifles that they had there, or different handguns or holsters, stuff like that. I was answering some questions for people and you know, discussing, you know, options.
Right on. So how many people were there?
They didn't come out with a number yet. I suspect the the Bonner County Sportsman to have a number at the next meeting that takes place next month. But there was a lot of people there. Saturday was really busy. Friday was a half day. So it was busy, you know, for a little while on Friday. But Saturday had some pretty good lines and a lot of people moving through.
Are we thinking more or less than like 300, 400?
More.
More than 400?
Yeah.
Oh, right on, man.
So it was a great time. Met a lot of great people and had some great discussions. A lot of politics being talked.
Is this a regular show? Like, is this something that
is an annual show?
Again? It's annual. So if someone wants to go to the Gun and Horn Show, put on by the Bonneville County Sportsman,
Bonner County Sportsman.
Bonner County. I'm terrible. If someone wants to go to the Gun and Horn Show put on by the Bonner County Sportsman, they can look for that on... Is there a website? Where can they look for that?
Well, there is a website for the group. It's bonnercountysportsman.org. I don't know if you're going to get a whole lot of information off of it. You can go to integrityarmory.com and I will have stuff built.
So you'll be there next year. You'll be throwing it up on the... Okay. So go
to... I'll have a table next year and I'll be talking, you know, about my firearms instruction and custom AR building and stuff like that. And I'll be in conjunction with Derv's Guns. You can go to Derv's Guns website, which is dervsguns.com. That's DERVSGUNS.com. And he'll have a lot of information leading up to the show as well.
Very cool. All right. So with that, we're going to move on to our first opinion segment. We're done with all the factual stuff now. Now Mike's going to... Well, sort of.
This is fact.
Right.
Only speaking
truths.
So
we're done with the objective reporting. We're going to get a little bit into the opinion part here. What did you see that might have set the bear loose?
Ah! The bear is loose!
This is not a drill. The exits have been sealed to prevent escape. Please follow all instructions from the staff and do not make any sudden movements.
Well, I was working with an individual who was at the booth with us, and he was with his daughter, I believe, and they were walking around the show to take in what other vendors had and see what they had. And he told me about an interaction between an individual selling an AR-15 and a customer. And the interaction was less than truthful. The vendor was portraying his AR-15 that he was selling in a much higher light than it should have been portrayed. So he was basically lying about his products.
Now, this is based off of a secondhand report. You didn't witness this.
I did not witness this, but I saw an individual with the rifle that he described walking around the show later, or, you know, after he had told me about this. And I see other booths that have stuff like the whole M855 issue, where they have the price of the ammunition that goes up. I understand a raise in price when that demand is high, but when your price goes from 55 cents per round to $1.15 per round, that's excessive. That's excessive.
I'm curious how you determine what amount is excessive on a price change.
On a price change, because a federal agency decides to make to remove an exemption for something. So there is green tip ammo that is available, but because of people that buy it at the regular price and then turn around and go to a gun show and try to sell it for twice, over twice the price, you're causing undue inflation. You're going to cause panic buying. Well, he's not causing panic buying because it looked like he was dragging everything he brought in out.
You can't induce someone to buy by raising the price.
I don't know. I seem to disagree with that because I don't think you should sell a Delton stock AR for $300 more than you paid for it.
But see,
off this store shelf.
What you're describing is a classic arbitrage situation where there is a market inefficiency and you have people exploiting the market inefficiency to make a profit, right?
Are you going to master's degree us?
I can. I mean, we can do that if we want. If here's the thing. There is a market inefficiency between the people who really, really want this ammo and the people who really have the ammo, correct? They're not able to find each other because it wouldn't exist.
The
way it
works is you have people that have the ammo and they're selling it, and then something happens and there's a run on this ammunition, and all these people who never wanted it to begin with are all of a sudden thinking, I better have that. I need to have that because they don't buy to secure themselves.
So we'll go with your situation. You're talking about, the demand isn't real. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So who are we to determine whether or not someone is able to exchange their money for goods that they decide that they want? Like, why is there a value thrown into that? You're making a value judgment that their need or their want or their desire isn't legitimate. You're turning it into a moral.
You want to go buy some 22 long rifle shells?
Some 22 long rifle shells?
Yeah. Go to the store and find some 22 long rifle.
I don't know what
you're saying. Tell me how long it takes.
Tell you how long. Okay, so here's the thing. You have one of two choices, right? You either raise the price and slow down the amount of ammo that people are buying so that you still have supply for those customers that come in wanting it, right? But even as we see it, if they raise the price, they don't raise it fast enough to stop the buying, correct? Because they still see the suppliers are out of the ammunition.
Unless you're cheaper than dirt and the price doubles overnight.
Right, but they still have stock, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have stock or not? I haven't looked.
I have no idea. I haven't looked at.
Right, so you do one of two things. You either raise the price, you still have stock for the customers who really need it, quote unquote, right?
Right.
Because I'm not comfortable assigning, you know, a moral significance to whether or not someone should be able to buy the ammunition. If they have the money and they're willing to part with it, I think they should be able to buy it. But you have to do one of two things. You either have to limit the amount that someone can buy artificially and say, I'll only sell you two boxes. Or you raise the price. Now, which one of those is more, quote unquote, fair?
It should be free ammo for everyone. It shouldn't be free healthcare. It should be free ammo for everyone.
So if you... I said so now. Ugh. If you are willing to part with more of your money to buy the ammo, is it fair to say that your need or want or desire is greater than the person who isn't?
If you're going to pay over double price for the ammo in less than a month's time span, you're part of the problem.
Okay. How do we determine what the price is of ammunition?
We determine prices by supply and demand.
Okay. So if it changes from time A to time B, it increases by 100%, which is what you're saying.
So it's not the manufacturer increasing the price. It's the people that are selling it.
Even if it was, what difference would it make for your argument? If the manufacturer was increasing the price.
If it costs more to manufacture, that's different. That would be different.
So you're saying that if the manufacturer doesn't have an expense change, but they change the amount of profit they earn, is that different than the person who buys the ammo and then holds on to it and sells it for a profit?
No, they're both dirty.
They're both dirty. Gotcha. You have to do something to respond to these market conditions. And you're either going to say, oh, you can only buy two boxes, which then everyone's going to go in and buy two boxes and you're out of ammo, right? Or you're going to increase the price. And by increasing the price, there's a possibility that you might be able to meet the demand for those who are willing to pay that price. But artificially holding the price down is going to lead to outages like we have now, because nobody wants to be a gouger. Except for cheaper than dirt.
But I'm not going to pay $100 for 100 rounds.
No one says you have to. I don't. Why are you going to get angry about someone charging a price you're not going to pay for the product?
Because that's a ridiculous price. Okay.
So what?
The magazine.
They can't.
Newtown.
Okay. So
all right,
cheaper than dirt.
Magazine.
So
goes
hold on.
From $10
hold on now.
To $100 overnight.
Is cheaper 10 than
to 100.
Is cheaper than dirt going to ship ammo to your house and charge your credit card without your permission?
Yes, they will.
I'm not going to get worked up about people changing the price of their products. I can't do it. You know what? I'm going to get called. I can get called all kinds of stuff.
That I'm worked up
about.
They
can call me a bankster. You can call me whatever it is.
Oh, boy. I'm not so worried about the cost of the 223 ammunition, because I wasn't that concerned about it to begin with. 62 grain, green tip. It's fine. If you want to shoot it, okay, go ahead.
But if you're misrepresenting your product, that's an entirely different issue.
That's a different issue entirely. But like you said, if you're not going to pay it, why should you be worked up about it? The booth that had the ammunition in question looked like they were going to drag out every bit that they brought in. So,
I'm not sure what you mean by that. Drag out every bit that they brought in.
Everything, all the ammunition, all the green tip 5.56 they brought in and were charging crazy prices for, they had to haul back out to their vehicle because they didn't sell any of it.
So their strategy wasn't successful anyway.
No, because the people here aren't dirty gougers.
Oh, my. Well, good for them. They still have stock that they'll be able to sell on the black market after it becomes illegal.
Right.
Oh, fun times. If you want to comment on Cheaper Than Dirt's pricing policies, feel free to email me at john@beararmsshow.com.
Or you can email me, mike@beararmsshow.com.
That's right. Just call him a communist.
Yes, call me a communist, call me a socialist. I don't think it's right to gouge people. Although you talk about artificial, what did you call it? Artificial holding down of prices.
Manipulation. market manipulation.
What about like Walmart? They haven't raised the prices on anything because their price from their manufacturer hasn't changed.
That's their problem. I'm saying let the supplier, whoever has the stock, set the price. I'm not saying that it needs to be controlled one way or the other. I'm not saying they should be forced to increase the price.
All right.
I just think it's funny that people get worked up about the price that someone charges. Cheaper than dirt is the example that I always see people complaining about.
And yes, there's reason for that. But
and I think it's funny because it's, you know, they're not going to charge your credit card and send you ammo without you having bought it. Like, you can't.
So you don't think it's wrong after Newtown, them changing the price of a 30-round magazine? Well, no, you don't think it's wrong because you can't buy them anyway. But
why would me be able to buy a 30-round magazine have any bearing on whether or not I make a moral judgment?
What, if you can buy it or not?
On an activity, yeah. I can judge.
Because you think it's evil. People from New Jersey make judgments on our gun ownership in other states.
No, that's
all the time when you can't own guns over there.
Why do you think we do this show? Do you think we do this show because I don't like magazines that hold more than 15 rounds?
Yes.
Okay. Are you just trying to bait me into saying something dumb? Is that what you're trying to do now?
No.
And then you're going to use that to eradicate my argument? Like, well, you said this. That means everything else you said is incorrect.
No, I'm not. So, Newtown happens. The dirt changes their price on 30-round magazines from something like $10 to $99. Do you think that is right?
I don't care what they change the price to. They could change it to $1,000 for all I care. They can't force anyone to buy it at that price.
Right. Well,
they can lower their price until people are willing to buy it again. I mean, you know, here, the value that you put on, you know, the price that something sells doesn't mean that, you know what? I'm going to change this up a little bit. So the price of the magazine, is the price of the magazine a function of its value to the person who's willing to buy it, or a function of the costs that it took to produce it?
Depends on what you're talking about.
Why?
Why not?
Okay, so here it is.
It's a function of the value of the customer who's purchasing the item.
Right, and the only way that you're going to find it is by having an assortment of prices, and you find out where you get equilibrium.
Let's move on to topic number two.
Constitutional carry. Is it a good idea?
What do you think, John? Do you think constitutional carry is a good idea?
I think constitutional carry is a fabulous idea.
So what about states that require, like Ohio requires 14 hours of firearms training, and other locations like Montana don't require? Well, what about like Arizona? You're not required to have firearms training to get your concealed carry permit.
I think Arizona's constitutional carry.
So you can carry it no matter what.
Yeah, if you can own a gun, you can carry a gun.
So you don't think that somebody from Arizona who's never had any firearms training goes to Ohio, they should be able to carry their firearm with them?
I realize that you want to charge confiscatory training fees on anyone who ever even thinks about touching a firearm.
Me?
Yeah. You just want to gouge these poor firearms owners.
You're right. You're right. I want to gouge people. When they make it a law that you have to have firearms training.
Mike is on the sidelines
cheering. Think about purchasing a firearm.
Mike is on the sidelines wearing a cheerleading outfit, pom-poms in hand.
Exactly.
No, I don't think that they should. I don't think you should have any kind of training requirement for the exercise of a constitutional right. So you should be able to bear arms in some form without any training requirement.
Right. What's probably one of the best methods of training? Gaining experience, right? The more you do something, the better you get at it.
Well, see, I'm not even going to go so far. Like, I'm not going to say that you have to be able to carry concealed to be able to bear arms.
Right. Like, oh, right. I'm not even talking about carrying
concealed. If bearing arms means open rifle carry, and you can do that without a permit or training or whatever, then I'm fine with that. Because you have a form of bearing arms. I'm not saying that, you know, you can't have a concealed carry licenses. I would prefer that any lawful U.S. citizen would be able to carry concealed anywhere in the country. I think that would make sense. But I think as long as there's a form of carry available to every lawful U.S. citizen, that the burden has been met. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Well, what do you think about recognizing concealed carry permits like driver's licenses?
I think that makes perfect sense. We do it for marriages. We do it for driver's license. We do it for birth certificate. I mean, you recognize other paperwork,
documentation.
You recognize other states' paperwork for all kinds of things. This idea that, you know, you're not going to recognize another state's concealed carry permit, I think is a little silly.
I would agree with you.
And the argument from the antis is like, oh, well, it's going to be a race to the bottom, right? With states easing their restrictions. But, you know, the way most of these things are worded is you're a resident of the state that you have the permit from. It's not people shopping for a state to get their permit from. The only reason that happens now is because we don't have universal reciprocity. The way it happens now is there's different states recognize different combinations of other states. People shop around so that they can get maximum reciprocity, not because they're looking for the lowest qualification standard.
Right.
You know, right. You have people doing the Utah course. They're not doing the Utah course because it's the easiest.
Right. Exactly. They're doing it because you get a large number of states that you can carry a firearm.
Right.
And of course, one of those states definitely is not New Jersey.
None of those states are New Jersey.
So now that
support for the permitless constitutional carry is being supported in how many states here? It looks like we just had the recent one we talked about in West Virginia.
I believe it was 5 states. It was Kansas, New Hampshire, and West Virginia. And I think Iowa came the following day after this article came out, and there is one more that I cannot remember. They were added on the day after Iowa was.
Okay. So it's gaining traction. More and more states are going to permitless constitutional carry. Permitless carry, I think, is more descriptive. I think when people don't really understand the Constitution, they might have trouble with constitutional carry. I think everyone that listens, if you're listening to this show, you know exactly what constitutional carry is. I think if you say constitutional carry to someone who isn't following any of the gun issues closely, or they're not, you know, someone who's interested in gun rights, then they're probably not going to understand constitutional carry. Permitless carry, I think they're going to understand, but they may have an initial negative reaction to it at first, because they're going to think, well, then the bad guys can carry because they won't need a permit, you know, and that's just silly.
That is.
Should silly. We explain why it's silly? I think our audience, you guys can figure it out, right?
I think they can grasp
it. If you're listening to the show, you know why it's silly, you know, because, you know, if you're a quote unquote bad guy, you know, you're not worried about the permit. You're going to carry whether, you know, you have the permit or not.
You're going to carry whether it's legal or not.
You know, the guy who's carrying under this permitless carry is the same guy who would carry with a concealed carry permit without the expense and the hassle of having to ask the government for permission to do it.
Right.
Okay.
So what's our call to action, John? Join Integrity Armory and become a member of Integrity Armory.
How do you become a member of Integrity Armory?
You go to Integrity Armory's website, which Mike bombed the other day and has to rebuild now. And
you broke your website.
Email him. I broke my website. Oh. And email him, Michael at integrityarmory.com, and say, hey, I want to be a member.
Right. He likes to be, well, no, we won't go there.
Shameless.
I was going to say visit beararmshow.com for show notes and more information on any of the stories that we talked about. beararmshow.com.
Yes, go to beararmshow.com.
All right. Final topic of the evening.
What do we got?
All right. I get a little bit flustered from time to time.
Like by gouging?
Not by gouging. I get flustered by people who complain about gouging. But we're away from that now. I have pet peeves, okay? And among my pet peeves are people who, we talked a little bit about this last week, people who read or don't read past headlines. That's one of my pet peeves. Another one of my pet peeves is when someone doesn't have the expertise that they claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend time talking about issues on which they aren't educated. Now, we try not to do that here on this show. We try to be really good about sticking to things that we know about. And if we don't know about something, I think we're pretty upfront about saying when we don't know about something, right?
Like gouging.
Like.
I'm sorry.
Yes, like gouging.
You should see the look on his face.
So we had a whole conversation about gouging, but we're talking about how Mike felt about it. And then I talked a little bit about market theory, which I happen to know a little bit about. And we didn't get out of my depth, right?
Right.
Do you feel that way? Do you feel like I went out of my depths?
I feel.
Or do you think that I was well acquainted with that which I argued?
I feel like you tried to gouge me in your explanation.
Okay. All right. So basically, what we're having on here is, I think the way that we treat victims, whether it's victims of so-called gun crime, which is just crime. I think it's irrelevant whether or not a gun's used, but certain organizations like to focus on the fact that a gun was used to commit a crime. Or victims of gun laws. I think the same thing happens to them, that they are treated by organizations and even the communities around them as though their victim status has somehow created or has somehow imparted them with a special knowledge that the rest of us don't have, right? So, right. But you can use, and you see this in the media all the time, you can use victims, and this is either side, in my opinion. You can use victims to convey a message in a more compelling way than you can someone who isn't a victim or have victim status imparted upon them, right? And you see this all the time. People in arguments will sometimes try to claim that victim status in the argument, because then they're going to be empowered they'll
to automatically win the argument.
Yeah, they'll use it.
You can't argue with a victim.
Right. They'll use it to empower themselves in the argument or as a shield against criticism for any lack of knowledge they might have. Okay. So I just kind of wanted to throw a message on out there. This is, you know, something a little bit different. Is that ask the question, why do we let victims be treated like they're experts sometimes? Right. And I think I know why, is because no one wants to make them feel bad. And you certainly don't want to come off, you know, as the bully, you know, badgering some poor soul.
You're talking about Gabby, aren't you?
I actually, this is what tripped me this week to want to talk about this, is Gabby Giffords and them using her as a bludgeon against the NRA and any pro Second Amendment argument, right? You want to use her to shield themselves from criticism because you can't criticize her because she's a victim, right? And anything that you say that disagrees with what she says, you're attacking that victim.
Right. I don't see her as a expert on anything. I don't hold her words with any weight, because on one hand she talks about how horrible this, you know, these guns are, and on the other hand she goes out and shoots them. Her husband went the night before they had a discussion about how evil AR-15s and firearms were. He went and purchased two of them, or attempted to purchase two of them. So Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly, their words mean nothing to me. They could say whatever they wanted to, and I wouldn't listen to what they have to say because they're hypocrites. And they try to explain away what they're going or what they've done, their actions that are hypocritical. But you can talk all you want. You have to show me something to really get an idea of having respect about what you say. Yes, it's sad that she was shot. Right. What about the other individuals there who were shot and injured or killed?
Right. And so now what tripped me off was the first article I saw was one at Ammoland. And it was one where they were reporting that Gabby Giffords was on Capitol Hill to demand that everyone buying a gun be required to undergo a background check. And it was pointed out that the assailant who shot her had passed a background check, right?
Yes.
But the response to that was that people were attacking her, right?
So, what?
So pointing out that her attacker had passed a background check was, you know, the NRA or the gun lobby or whoever it was attacking Gabby Giffords.
Because we were pointing out flaws in their reasoning.
Correct.
So if you make a stupid statement, you have every...
Okay, here.
Expectation to be called out on that stupid statement.
All right, I just found it. It was A.W.R. Hawkins writing on Ammoland was the original article I saw. And then I guess Breitbart News got into this too. But the NRA had responded tweeting the Breitbart News report. And as soon as the NRA did that, that's when it looks like Slate, another new, well, quote unquote, news organization, responded pointing out how the NRA had sunk to a new low.
Right.
Attacking Gabby Giffords. Okay. But it's not just antis that do this. We do something similar. Okay. When we have victims of gun laws, sometimes, you know, we want to hear their stories, which makes sense. We want to hear, you know, what happened to them. But a problem with that is that when you have uneducated reporters talking to people who are, you know, tripped up by gun control laws, then they're going to rely on the victim's description of what happened to them. And unfortunately, they're not experts on the gun laws, so their descriptions may not be wholly accurate for what's legal to do and what isn't. And then you have reporters, you know, reposting this stuff everywhere. And here's the one example. Stefan Josie Davis, good guy. He's been on the show. We talked to him about his experience. He's also been covered in other, you know, news organizations and TV shows and stuff. And the one that, you know, I'm excited to see him getting the coverage. I like that he's getting it because it draws more attention to unjust gun laws in New Jersey. The problem is that for whatever reason, people in those organizations don't pay attention to some of the details. And one of the details that they get wrong is he wasn't an armed guard. They keep referring to him as an armed guard, but he was not actually in possession of his carry permit, so he couldn't function as an armed guard, right? He was working for the armored car company, but he himself wasn't armed at his work. And he confirmed that right here on our show.
Right.
The other one that gets me is that he's, and I've heard this, I think it was after he was on our show, you know, that there's this idea that, well, if he would have had his gun in the glove compartment. I don't know if he said this or if it was something that someone else misinterpreted, but that if he had had the gun in the trunk instead of the glove compartment, that he would have been within the law. And
it would
have been up to a judge's interpretation of whether or not he's within the law, because is going to work a reasonable deviation between going from home to the range, right? If you're going to go from home to work and then to the range, is that a reasonable deviation between the home and the range? I doubt any judge in New Jersey is going to see it that way.
Right.
So, you know, it's really important that we do a better job getting the facts out to some of these media organizations, because they don't necessarily have expertise in these areas. Particularly with New Jersey gun law, it's not easy. It's fairly complicated. And it's easy to get tripped up. So,
cops can't understand it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the other thing that's interesting.
And the lawyers can't understand it either.
This is a little bit off topic, but the other interesting thing about all these stories is that, did you notice, none of them get arrested right away, right? Well, very few of them. I think Keith Pantaleon got arrested right away. But with Stefan Josie, with the most recent one, the elderly gentleman with the antique firearm, all these guys, there was discussion of, they didn't know whether or not they should arrest him, right? If you read Brian Aiken's book or you've heard him discuss his situation, the police didn't arrest him as soon as they found the guns in the back of his car. They tried to give them to his parents, but they didn't know where to put them or something. And So the police either took the guns or, you know, something happened. Intermediate steps were taken. And then these guys get arrested. In some cases, it's, you know, within hours, and the cops never left. In other cases, it's a day or two later when they either go in Stefan's case, to pick up their firearm, they get arrested. Or with, I cannot think of his name off the top of my head. With the other gentleman, with the antique firearm, it was like a day or two later, they went and got him. So it's almost like, you know, they don't know the law well enough to determine whether or not an arrest should be made. And yet these are the dangerous people roaming the streets or whatever it is that need to be locked up for years.
Right. With antique firearms and flintlock pistols.
So, but that's kind of a side point that I think is an interesting thought. My main point is, you know, we want to have the reactions of these victims of gun laws. And I think the other side wants to, you know, they want to abuse their victims into, you know, scoring political points or whatever it is. But none of them are really experts by virtue of their victim status. You know, the fact that, you know, they might have experience that we want to hear about, but that doesn't mean that, you know, every word that comes out of their mouth on the law is gospel. You got to listen to the attorneys and, you know, the other folks in the people who have been solid in the movement, you know, are your best sources on whether or not, something is, you know, passes the smell test on legality.
Right.
Preferably attorneys. So that's what I had to say about that. That was just, you know, what's been rattling around in my brain this week is, one is, how do we get away from this having to rely on the victims to try and tell the story of what's wrong with the gun law, right? Because that's what happens is you want to get them in front of the media to tell their story and their experience, but then where do you go from there, right? You say to them, or the media is going to ask them, well, what's, you know, what needs to be fixed or what needs to be done? And it's like, well, they might not know. They might not know how to fix the law, right?
They need a PR person to...
Well, it's, I don't know about PR, but, you know, and it's good. Like, if you have Evan Knappen as your lawyer and you bring him on to the show with you, then he can respond to that. He can tell you exactly what needs to be done to fix the law.
Right. Exactly.
You know? So, but, you know, unfortunately, not every attorney in New Jersey is Evan Knappen or someone on his staff. You know, we got apparently we have a lot of guys in there who just say, you know, play ball, just plead out. You won't do any time.
Yeah, you'll it's just, okay. Don't worry just about
be,
it.
You'll just be the same as a convicted felon for the rest of your life and lose your right to guns and voting. So, yep, that's what's rattling around the brain. And with that, we thank you for listening to the show.
Yes, thank you.
That's going to do it. We'll see you next week. And we'll talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Bear Arms Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes to rate and leave a review. This helps spread the word, and we thank you for it. For show notes or updates about new episodes, please visit www.beararmshow.com.